Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on PBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Johnny Bolin grew up in the Midwest in the 50s. His father, Richard Bolin, worked at a packing plant, and mother, Barbara, worked at a hospital. They had busy full-time jobs not related to music, so hardly the parents to raise three boys that made music all their lives. Johnny's oldest brother, Tommy, was a guitarist, Johnny a drummer, and his younger brother, Rick Pudge, was a singer. They all started playing in bands after getting their first musical instruments and then performed at high schools, ballrooms, street dances, etc. Tommy left school and moved to Denver at the age of 16. He got in a recording band and was on American Bandstand by the time he was age 18. He went on to play with concert bands, James Gang, and one of the biggest rock bands of the 1970s, Deep Purple. Johnny somewhat followed his path at the time. He continued to play around the Midwest and got a big break, joining Tommy's band in 1976, playing Mile High Stadium in Denver, changing his life forever. Johnny tragically lost his brother later that year, but continued on. He moved to California, Miami, New York City, and eventually settled in Minneapolis. At that time, he accepted a job with Black Oak, Arkansas, and traveled worldwide for the next 30 years. Playing, recording, and traveling were and are Johnny's life. Today, he's back in his hometown of Sioux City, Iowa, and still beating the skins after all these years. Please welcome longtime drummer for Black Oak, Arkansas, producer, session drummer, guitarist, and brother to the late, great Tommy Bolin, Johnny Bolin, to Interviewing the Legends. Hey, Johnny.
How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good, man. How are things over in Iowa?
Well, you know, the weather's kind of here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Today's not so bad. It's definitely not Florida weather at all.
No, man. You need to move here next.
Not, you know, that particular subject we don't need to talk about. It's not going to go anywhere. It's cold today. It's cold tomorrow.
Cold tomorrow.
It'll be cold Friday.
You know, when I think of Iowa, I always think of Radar from MASH.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's from Ottumwa, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's where Tom Arnold lived. And then they opened up, him and his wife, Roseanne Barr, opened up a, sold, Caverns are a big name down here for a sloppy joe without the ketchup and mustard, you know, all that.
Right.
Called Taverns and Maybrights. And no one's ever heard of them, so they opened up one in Ottumwa.
Huh, how about that?
I think it's called Roseanne's.
They call it Roseanne's? Yeah.
That's way, way back then.
Yeah.
It's known for a few things, Iowa is, but corn, basically, I guess, huh?
Yeah, corn for a long time. I hear it's a beautiful state, though.
Yeah, it is.
Now, are you
nice
still...
Nice to visit, but...
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess nice place to visit, but I guess I do live here also. So.
Well, you know, there's nothing like... There's no place like home, right?
There's no place like home. That's probably a better way of putting it.
Exactly, yeah. Now, are you still performing with Black Oak, Arkansas?
Yeah, well, I'm leaving tomorrow. We're going to play down in Wichita. And then we have a couple gigs next week in Memphis. living down in Memphis.
Right.
And we're supposed to come under your neck of the woods and Cape Coral, Cape Coral with Blackfoot on next Saturday. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not quite sure what we're doing there.
I got the schedule. Yeah. February 29th in Cape Coral.
Yeah, Cape Coral, yeah.
Yeah. And let's see, Wichita.
Yeah, I'm out with them. We did an album.
Uh-huh.
Came out about a year ago on Cleopatra Records.
Right.
And about halfway through, Ray, I got they call it AFib. And so I had to get a fibrillator and a pacemaker.
Wow.
So now I can really keep time. So I had stopped playing with those guys for about close to almost a year.
Yeah.
You know. Because when we go on the road sometimes, you know, I mean, I'll just say on the road, everyone knows what I mean.
Well, it's tough being on the road, man. It does take a lot of stress out of you.
It can be, no matter what. Sure, I mean, the hotels are nice.
Yeah.
When you get there, it's nice, but you have to travel. Sometimes they're not the best conditions. And,
right.
And also, I mean, it's on the road, and you're supposed to be able just to withstand anything. I did that when I was younger.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do my whole life.
Right.
Not that part of it. Play music, yes.
Yep. Well,
I'm back at it again, and everything's fine.
Good. Do you ever play?
Danny's birthday's coming up, so he's still hanging in there.
Do you ever play guitar with the band, or you only drums?
Oh, with Black Oak?
Yeah.
Well, I've done a couple gigs, uh-huh. and sitting in on a couple songs.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's really what I do. I play back here some too, and I can just kind of like I don't know how much Buddy Miles played guitar, but I know how to play guitar. I'm pretty good, so I go in and out. But it's mostly drums,
right?
You know?
Right.
I'm sick to drums.
Yeah, Buddy Miles did play some guitar. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. And Marvin Gaye played drums. I remember that.
Yeah,
too.
Some of those guys are really good drummers. I mean,
yeah.
Prince is really funky.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not really astonishing to hear, but he is. Or was.
Yeah. Now, are you still doing some session work too?
Not a whole lot of session work.
Uh-huh.
I've still been playing, you know, well, since I've been back here, like in the wintertime, we don't really tour at all with Black Oak. This is our first gig in about 2-3 months, but, you know, I got a couple of clubs that I just play at weekly, you know, like a Wednesday night here and a Saturday night there, and, you know, it's called Bowling's Alley.
Okay.
That's the name of the band.
Cool.
But, you know, just try to stay busy.
Yeah, a lot of bands like playing the small clubs, don't they?
Yeah, it's different kind of music, too, than Black Oak. I mean, we definitely don't do any Black Oak, and we don't do any of that other that we do, but, you know. Yeah, it's neat to play a real good keyboard player, a really good bass player.
Right.
And they kind of play, you know, a little bit on the outside, a little fusion, you know, stuff like that, where I don't get a chance to play it at all otherwise.
Yeah. Well, how about making an album?
Oh, a solo record?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about that, you know. I haven't got around to it, but I better hurry up and do it.
well, today,
I'm going to do it, stop talking about it. But, you know, I stay pretty busy. And
right.
And not that I rely on Tommy for anything like that, but I try to keep his legend going, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything that I feel I can be a part of or enhance by being his brother. I mean, the albums that come out, I mean, that. Oh, it's Friday Music now. We put out Tommy's albums, and before we had the Tommy Bowen Archives, we put out 20, you know, CDs back then, unreleased material. And then, top of that, we did a Great Gypsy Soul, you know, with all those guys playing Lukather and Bonamassa and Frampton and
that was a great album.
Steve Lukather. So I, you know, that keeps me busy too. That way, I'm. Because I mean, I'd hate for him people to forget about him.
Well, you know, thanks to you and Trace Keane, it still feels like he's still around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Trace is great at, you know, yeah. interviews and all that stuff like that. I got other people to help me with record deals or, you know, anything that comes up they want to know, you know, get next to, you know, that I pretty much take care of his affairs when,
yep.
after he passed, I was the, you know, minister to the estate. I got the house.
And, right.
But this, the house I live in now is the house that Tommy was born.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, that, you know, when we play the Poland Fest every year, we play at Sioux City, Iowa here, and we get a lot of people that come over to the house, you know, and I finally got air conditioning. You know, after a while there, but they didn't care.
Is it true that, let's see, your mom, did she have a Syrian background?
Yeah, my mom's full-blooded Syrian.
Really? So is my dad.
My dad's full-blooded Swede.
Yeah, my dad's background, I have Syrian background as well.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and so you know who else does? It's Frank Marino from Mahogany Rush.
Well, yeah, I've never seen you, Ray, but the last name kind of sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad's family is from Syria, and my mother's family is from Spain. And what I just found out, I did a one of those DNA things, and most of my family, I guess they migrated from Italy to Syria. And and I talked to Frank Marino about that. He's a real expert on all that stuff, and he says his family did the same thing.
He knew he was Syrian. He didn't have to look it up, did he? That's what he found out.
Yeah, exactly. How about that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really weird though. You know, no one ever really knew. I'd say I'm half Syrian. Like, where's that and all that stuff. And with all the press it gets all the time, people still don't know about Syria.
Exactly.
It's crazy. It's like, where's that at? It's like, do you listen to the news? I mean, we're in there all the time, but no one seems to care.
I know. They destroyed all the temples and all the beautiful architecture and everything.
Yeah, I know. I always wanted to go over there, but not so much anymore.
No, me either. Did your mom, did she have Syrian food in the house?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
My sisters made food, and she made some food, pataya and kibbe and kusa.
Awesome, man.
All that jazz. And Mediterranean, they have two dinners every year at the Syrian church.
Right.
Right up the street from us, and you know, we don't have a restaurant. We got Greeks, but no Syrians. But, you know,
it's close.
You get a taste of that every once in a while, too. But
yeah, it's close.
I love that food. And my mom, you know, and it's really weird, but it's a cool story. When the James Gang played, our next-door neighbor, her name was Scaff, you know, that's a Syrian name.
Right.
Anyway, and they called her Auntie, you know, that's all I knew about. She wasn't related to us or anything. But she came over, and she was about 15 years older than my mom. She's about 75 or... And they made, you know, more cabbage. And Tommy, like, he wouldn't eat meat, so he had grape leaves, and we had a grape leaves plant or tree, you know, in our backyard.
Right.
And they made 300 of them, and I remember that, because they sat here and rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled. And then they made some other things, you know, for the James Gang. Well, they presented it to them, and they just went crazy. They played here in the city. So a couple nights later, they played in Ames, which is about 180 miles. And they just kept, went crazy over it. So my mom and Auntie Scaff made the same thing over again. We'd haul it down there in cars. And so, you know, they never really said they had it. And Tommy loved it, too, you know.
Oh, it's good food, man. It really is.
Now you're making me hungry.
did you make...
There's no way to get it around here.
Did you eat sambusak?
Who?
Sambusak. It's a like a shell with sesame seeds and...
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No? How about the little... It's like a cookie almost. It's kak. It's a circle with sesame seeds.
Oh, you know what it's called? Well, I can't say it on the air. ACH or something like that.
Right, right, right. That's it.
Yeah, but that it's the word. It's funny. My mom used to say, "I just love that word." You know.
Uh-huh.
Mom, that doesn't sound right to my ear.
That's it. That's the one.
You know, I think everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That word. Yeah. That four-letter word.
Did you learn any Arabic at all from your mom?
You know, just some words. Yep. You know, I used to bring home girls all the time, and she'd say, you know, every night it's a different Charmuta.
Uh-huh.
You know, Charmuta was a whore, you know.
That's funny. That's funny.
And then the girl, and she'd say right in front of her, and the girl had no idea what.
Yeah.
What is a Charmuta? I go, I don't know, just kind of a gypsy, kind of elegant.
Yeah, exactly.
Gypsy, you know.
Yeah. That's cool.
At all.
That's awesome.
But yeah, my whole family, this is a family home, so it's my grandfather's house. And
uh-huh.
But he moved here in 40, he bought this house in 42.
Right.
And then the whole family was here. There's seven of them.
Right.
My mom had five sisters and two brothers.
Wow.
And now I'm here by myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Figure that out.
Hey, we might be related somewhere down the line.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe I should check into that.
Yeah. You got to check with Frank Marino also. You know him, right? From Mahogany Rush?
Yeah, I never met him. I've seen him play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
He goes great.
He's over in Canada, but yeah, he knows the whole history of the series.
Well, Freddie Salem, now, I don't know if you ever heard of his name.
Who's that?
Played with the Outlaws.
Who?
Freddie Salem.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he took Henry Paul's place in the Outlaws.
Right, right.
But I played with Freddie Salem band for a while.
Uh-huh.
And he's full-blown Lebanese.
Really?
Yeah, so I moved to Ohio with him once to start the band. I met him in L.A. And
yep.
That's where he's from, outside Cleveland.
Right, right.
And I stayed at his mom and dad's house, and they had Kibby and
mm-hmm.
yeah, raw Kibby, which I don't, you know, that's definitely Lebanese.
Yeah, my best friend was my best friend was from Lebanon, also. Yeah,
and, you know, and the family's reminded me of my family.
Exactly,
not my dad, because you know,
yeah,
Swedish is far from Syria.
Yeah,
as far as people, you know, way they act and But yeah, I was like, it was a great upbringing, and we played over in Sweden with Black Oak. We did a Swedish rock festival over there.
Yep, that's a good festival. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great festival.
Yep. Who were some of the musicians that inspired you in becoming a drummer growing up?
My dad.
Your dad? Huh.
Well, you know, he was just in the. My dad just loved Elvis.
Right.
That was his whole deal there.
Yeah.
And that's why he, you know, Tommy was pantomiming, playing guitar, and
uh-huh.
you know, they enter him in talent contests. And, I mean, Tommy's hair was not, I say it was black, but people say, well, it's really dark brown, but it looked black to me. But, you know, my dad would dress him up, and he'd slick his hair back, and he'd put a leather jacket on him. And then, you know, he almost back then, you know.
Yeah.
I got some great pictures of him.
I did. I saw a picture of you and Tommy when you guys were little with the guitars. That was really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was at my aunt's house. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, he was dressed just like he just came out of a band box.
Right.
You know, like suit, red tie, black suit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got me next to him. I look like Buck Owens. I got, apparently, his old clothing, because my jeans were hemmed, you know, they put, like, and I wore like a cowboy shirt. Like, so Tommy was really the number one. They kind of lost interest with, but you know, he wanted us to, wanted us to be something. He wanted my younger brother to be a wrestler.
Really?
So he shaved his head. So as a kid, he was a round boy. You know, he was not fat.
Uh huh.
And he looked a little, you know, muscular for being so little. But the shorter he cut his hair, the meaner he gets. I mean, Tommy got to have bangs and long hair.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, my dad's telling us what we're doing at such an early age. Like, yeah, well, whatever. We don't know, so.
Well, you know, it's good to have a dad that's interested like that, though. You know, it really
is.
Yeah,
I mean, you hear these fathers are, you know.
Right.
They're, you know, such a big part of their upbringing of their family. Like, you know, the Beach Boys had problems with their dad, and the Jacksons had problems with their dad.
Right, right.
Yeah, my dad, he already knew what we were going to be. It's like, you know, he's strict on us being musicians and playing. And,
uh-huh.
And he said to both me and Tommy, I didn't know he said to Tommy, but he didn't say it very many times, but he said, it's a good thing you can play drums because you can't do anything else. And I said, well, if you'd let me do something else, you never
exactly.
teach me nothing. So
exactly.
But he said, you know, he didn't want us to be in the packing plant business.
Right, right. Well, that's good, man. He had a great attitude, you know? You got great memories with your dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a good upbringing. And well, you know, for him to leave so young, and
yeah.
My mom was into the Carmelite nuns, and
huh.
And you know, they are, and they, she gave them, you know, he gave them funding, not much money, whatever you got, and they pray. That's mm-hmm. all they do is pray.
Right, right.
And she said, well, pray for, if Tommy goes, he, you know, pray, if that's right for him to do the thing that they want him to do. And they said, if he leaves and he goes and he's happy and he's, you know, doing what he wants to do.
Right, right.
That's the right thing to do.
Yep, and he's happy.
That's all it took was him to tell her that. And then,
yeah.
That's like, yeah, God, you know, must be God talking to you.
Right, right.
So he looked at, like, you know, 16 and hitchhiked and lived in.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy, him leaving.
You know, Tommy has done so much for such a short lifespan. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, he really has.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always, but, you know, I saw him as a kid play.
Uh-huh.
And when I got old, you know, because I was 3 years behind, and at one period, you don't know how good somebody is.
Right.
But, you know, even when he was 15 and I was like 12, that's when I started playing, and I'd have a band, and he'd be in his room playing, and I'd knock on the door, and I'd say, can we come in and watch you play?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, yeah, we can come in for a little while. And then we, you know, our guitar player would go, how do you play, you know, whatever song we needed to learn, or
right.
got to learn, or we need to know the right chords. Sounds like you know them. He goes, yeah, I'll show you.
Did Tommy have any professional training, or was it all by ear?
Well, no, it's a, yeah, it wasn't really professional. Actually, it was kind of crazy. The lady, his first guitar teacher,
okay.
Miss Sullivan, she lived a block away from where I was now.
Right.
And I never, you know, really ever saw her again or heard from her. You know, I mean, she's an old one. But she taught country western. But, you know, she, you know, there's a lot of chords involved in country.
Yeah.
So I think that's where he learned that part of it. And then he went down to the music store, and they got that guy down there was into teaching steel guitar. He taught some guitar, but mostly steel.
Yeah.
And that's where Tommy, you know, on a couple of little Zephyr songs on that album,
right.
Going back to Colorado.
Right.
You know, he plays lap, or not lap steel, he plays actually electric steel guitar. Other than that, no. You know?
Yeah.
Just come and learn from watching and listening.
Yeah.
You know, I had a good ear.
I admire that. I admire the good ear thing. You know, it's amazing how some great guitar players just play by ear and they can't read music.
Yeah. Yeah, he really could. And
yeah.
He changed it around and played his style.
Yeah.
You know, but he'd just come back and he'd be, once he went to death. Well, he went to Denver and then came back.
Right.
You know, it's like, who are the guitar players like Rick Derringer when he's in the McCoys?
Yep.
When he's 16, and then when he's 18, he's with Johnny Winter. It's two different guys.
Yep.
It's like, well, we're showing how to play like that.
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of what happened with Tommy. I mean, he could play when he left here really, really well, but, you know, he needed to get out there and yeah. musician.
What made him go to Colorado? Did he have friends out there? Or?
Well, he had one guy that was in his band, the Patch of Blue.
Uh-huh.
He's a year older, year and a half, 2 years, almost 2 years older. He had moved to Denver. And, you know, Tommy, you know, he got kicked out of school.
Right.
They really, I mean, they went back with his hair somewhat cut, but it wasn't even long anyway. So I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. But then they sent him home, and that's when the whole thing started with my mom and him wanting to leave and she not wanting to go.
Right.
So especially anyway, so young. So he got all that buddy is. He said, well, you stay with me for a while. I just got a little apartment. So he went out there and, you know, stayed with him for as long as he could. And then he, from there, to then he met, you know, Jeff Cook, and then he met Candy and David, and mm-hmm. then, you know, the rest is,
yeah,
you know, the rest of the story.
Yeah, I know all those guys, too. Yeah, Vital and Passarelli and a lot of those guys in Colorado.
Oh, yeah, Kenny, he first started after Zephyr, he kind of, you know, Kenny went out to New York with him, and then Tommy uh-huh. met Jeremy Steig, who used Tommy on he just did a demo, or what he, I guess it's for the record company, Jeremy Steig did. And, I guess Don Elias was supposed to be the drummer, but he didn't show up, so Jeremy knew Billy Cobham.
Yep.
So, that worked out really cool.
That was a great album.
Tommy just didn't, like, did not think much of it, playing with him again. He loved his playing, of course. And he just went back home and continued to play with Jeremy a little bit.
Yep.
But Kenny went out there with Tommy a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I had Kenny on the show. I had Joe. I had Reggie McBride on recently. Mike, a bunch of guys. Mike Finnegan. A lot of guys. Yeah.
Okay, he came back from the festival four times now.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He really is. Yep.
Yeah, he really, I mean, because him and Tommy just kind of dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he was living, they were both in Denver, but then, you know, Kenny got the gig with Elton and...
Yep.
And Stanley, him and Stanley both kind of, they got the same kind of feel.
Yeah,
Stanley Sheldon.
Yep. Yeah, I met Stanley Sheldon at a Peter Frampton concert. I interviewed him and hung out with him backstage during the Peter Frampton kind. Nice guy, really good guy also.
Great guy.
Yeah. And he got a good gig with Peter. Now Peter's going to retire, or has retired.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, he's with his band, the old band. He's with Ronan?
Yeah.
Yeah. They went over to Japan, I guess, but he's done with it with them, and then,
yeah.
You know, he did that tribute that actually was, the play for the induction of Tommy into the Colorado mm-hmm. Hall of Fame.
Right.
You saw that, didn't you?
I did see that.
You know, Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah.
Horn Haynes on that one.
Yep.
Me and Bobby played that.
Yep.
Another drummer from Kansas.
Well, I was lucky enough to see Tommy with the James Gang. He played with Alice Cooper and Roy Buchanan, and then he played with Deep Purple, and Nazareth was backing Deep Purple.
Yeah, I saw that tour.
Yeah.
They played with Nazareth.
Yep. And of course, that
was great.
And I mentioned to
my mom and dad really liked that.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool because,
yep.
You know, my dad, that was my dad's dream. I mean, James Gang was big. Him just seeing us on stage, whatever stage it was, you know, a step in the right direction. But then when we stayed at Howard Johnson's, and it was in Bloomington, or Normal, Illinois, where the college is.
Right.
And the lady says, well, if you go out your back, there's a little patio out there. You see planes come in, and so my dad saw Tommy's plane. You know, his Deep Purple plane.
Oh, cool.
Flying. So it's like,
that's pretty
and
neat.
From there to the limousine, and from there to,
yeah.
You know. So we got a really, that was great. He sent for us, and we all got a chance to go.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, he did a lot of things for such a short time. And, you know, the Spectrum album with Billy Cobham is a classic, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's like the Sgt. Pepper's of jazz fusion, you know?
Yep.
I mean, Billy, you know, he likes to talk about other things, but everyone only keeps asking about Spectrum.
Yeah.
But it was his number, it was the first album he ever made, and there's something to be said about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he liked to talk about the other 20 that he did, or whatever.
Exactly.
And then he called his band Spectrum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And everybody does Stratus.
Exactly.
Prince even does it.
Yeah.
Jeff Beck does it.
Great tune, great tune. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I was worried there for a minute. And when Tommy was with Zephyr, he actually opened up for Led Zeppelin, huh?
Did I open up for him?
No, Zephyr, when he was with Zephyr?
Yeah.
He actually opened up for Led Zeppelin, right, Tommy?
Oh, yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did some quite a bit of cool gigs back then for those kind of bands.
Right.
You know, I got write ups so they, you know, opened up for 10 years after, and John Mayall and Timothy Leary. I had a tape of them open up for Timothy Leary. You know, the king of acid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, they did some, and then they did, you know, some TV. They did Magic Bandstand. And,
yep.
So Zephyr was a really unique band, and they were real. I mean, they made a statement when they came out to play. I mean, because I talked to a lot of different musicians, and I hear Cobham, and I hear some people going, well, I didn't listen to Bill Cobham. I don't know if I never heard that guy, but then they'll go way into Deep Purple.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as James Gang, I didn't know, you know, it's like, some people don't have even the history they have. You know, that's what's great about Tommy playing with all those different kind of bands.
Yeah. Well, like you said, too, there's a lot of tribute albums. There was Tommy Bolin and Friends, Great Gypsy Soul, which was a tremendous cast of, you know, Bonamassa, Frampton, Warren Haynes, Glenn Hughes, of course, Brad Whitford, Derek Trucks.
Yeah, it's really the top of the B team.
Unbelievable.
And of course, you're always going after Walsh and Carlos and Jeff. You know, but, you know, you can't ask them anything.
Yeah.
Their manager rules their lives, I think. I mean, I don't know that much about them, but, you know,
yeah.
I know we've, and I know, you know, I met Jeff Beck, and he loved Tommy. I mean, he just told me some things that, you know, I can't imagine why he wouldn't ever want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's got to be, and I remember talking to Joe about it, Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah.
And he said that, I asked him to do it here, so he get, they're shuffling so many people. It's right around the NAMM show, which was a convention they have out in L.A.
Sure.
In January.
Right.
You know, he said it was on this big time schedule. I mean, it's hard to do that, like 4 or 5 or however time they had. So I think Joe was supposed to come in at 9. He goes, well, I want to make it quick. He goes, but I got to leave sometime because we're playing San Diego tomorrow. And they go, yeah, you'll be there now.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, at 1 o'clock, they still hadn't got him in to play. He said, I either got to play or I got to leave or I got to play tomorrow night.
Right.
But he said, I didn't want to leave. I said, you know, I just said that, but we didn't just say that. I really had to go, but he stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, he's glad he did.
Yeah.
And he bought that guitar Tommy's now. Well, it's actually a guy in the road crew, but Tommy's the one that made it. You know. Did Les Paul, did you hear about that? Or?
I don't think so, no.
Oh. funny Tommy Lawrence display had an American flag on it.
Right, right.
1960, okay. 1959, something like that.
Right.
Well, Zeman Brown, Tommy's roadie.
Uh-huh.
Tommy borrowed it for a little while when he was in Zephyr. And then David was always his roadie. So he goes, well, then Tommy turned into a scrap man. But he always still liked, took Les Paul for different feels, different tones, sounds.
Right.
So David, he said, well, just, always bringing the guitar on the road, I'm going to use it. So when I saw Bonamassa like 7 years ago, he goes, I said, you sure got a lot of Les Pauls? He's like, yeah, but I really love that one Tommy had. Mm-hmm. What happened to that? And I said, well, I know the guy that has it. He's kind of hard to get a hold of. But, so 7 years later, he got a hold of him. So he bought it about 3 months ago.
Yep.
So he's been playing it. He played it the night of the... We did the induction.
Okay.
They made a big, not a big deal about it, but he made it known that he's been following Tommy a long time.
Right. Didn't he put a pick guard or something in his museum, Bonamassa's museum or something like that, in his museum collection?
Yeah. He takes the guitar with him.
Right.
He needs a pick guard there.
Yeah.
But he replaced the pick guard with a brand new pick guard.
Okay.
Of the American flag. So it's a little more pronounced, I suppose.
Right.
And the other one's kind of cracking. You don't want to take it right on the road, He told me to see that when we played with him. And he said, but he had it with him, or he had it sent to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it back on for the Tommy show.
Okay.
Make it authentic. Yeah, it's in Joe's museum.
Yeah.
Nerdland or something.
Yeah, Nerdland, yeah.
Nerdsville.
And another tribute album was in, 97, Glenn Hughes and Friends. That's the one that you produced. And you were on that album as well, playing drums.
Yeah, I'm on that one.
Rocky Athus, who played with John Mayall, right, was also on that.
Yeah, he did for like 7 years.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much that guy tours.
Good guitar player.
John Mayall.
Yeah.
But he, like Frampton, he cut back.
Right.
Frampton, I think, had me, but John Mayall's the godfather of all of us.
I know. I know. I got to hang out with John here in Sarasota for his 80th birthday. That was cool.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah. He's still going strong, man, in his 80s. Yeah.
He's still going, pretty well.
Yeah.
No complaints.
Yep.
It's great you've been able to interview all those people.
I want to ask you about Tommy. Did you know that Tommy had a drug problem at all? The reason I'm asking also, I got my cousin, who was like a brother to me, he passed away from drug use. And, we grew up together. We went to all the concerts together. We partied together. But something he just kept on going. You know what I mean? Never stopped. And I lost him. Was there any hope for Tommy?
We all did what we did back then. It wasn't a problem because we all did it.
Right, right.
We didn't all do the same kind of drug, but, cocaine was a really big deal back then.
Right.
And, when I say everybody was on it, I don't mean everybody, but if you were anybody, you were on it. But anyway, there were problems, what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
It's like he didn't do any more than I did it, I didn't do any more than the other guy did it.
Right.
And then it goes on from there.
Exactly.
And then didn't we ever, and it's not really the drug, but, I didn't really, it's funny, never ever suffered from it, at that time. And then, as he grew older and started doing different why someone decides to go off the deep end.
Right.
Or what drives into it, but, you know, a faulty love affair,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, the drug itself, depression. And anyway, when he went out with Purple, he... Tommy's girlfriend Karen says that he wasn't, you know, he was, James came like the minor leagues compared to Deep Purple.
Right, I agree.
You know, they didn't have their own plane, and they didn't have, they weren't one of the top five bands in the world.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a different life for Tommy. He tried to keep up with them and tried to do some of the things he did, and he tried, you know. The amount of records he did, when he got back, I mean, he did Alphonse, and he's doing this one and that one. And, you know, it's just wear and tear, and he needed to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, they didn't have no clinics, you know, they didn't have...
Right.
They put you in the hospital for something happened to you.
Yeah.
So, and when I was on the road with him, because, you know, I know him pretty well by then, you know, I stayed at his house. We stayed at Linda Blair's house, and
yeah, really.
She's out doing Exorcist too. And Tommy knew her from from California.
Yeah,
and she knew a lot of bands. She hung out with Skinner and Rick James and Jim Dandy, and you know,
yeah.
She got around. I guess she must like music, but anyway, yeah. So we stayed at her house and. We sat there like the whole month, and I mean, we went out, we, you know, get a chance to, we spent some quality time together. But he never really indulged in anything, you know, like that. But he had a problem with Purple.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
Right.
I mean, well, I saw him, and I know I got a couple of live albums, you know, the Fox Bat one, and he plays incredible. So those guys, all you ever really hear is about his performances in Liverpool, and the one in Japan when his hand went crazy and needed acupuncture and whatever, all that stuff.
But, right, right.
So and then, you know, like Simon Robinson said in an article, said, you know, he quit Purple and he is back making another record. Back making another record and starting a new band to tour. And then, like 6 weeks later, I mean, he wrote Private Eyes in the studio, pretty much. And Bobby could tell you about that one.
Yeah.
That'd be great to talk to him about that, because he's there for that. But, then when he hit the road, it, you know, like I said, his love life was up in shambles. And,
yeah.
And, I mean, I think I know that story, but,
yeah.
So, you know, it seemed like he wasn't caring this much, but, you know, he had Nana Michael Wall at first.
Right.
And Bobby came in, saw one here.
Yep.
And then Bobby got dismissed, and then my turn. And, it wasn't my playing. I was only 22, but it wasn't my playing at all. But Norma, the sax player, wanted it more. You know, she played with Michael Walden and did his album, and she wanted a more of a high performance drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept time. I played really well. I'm on most of those, a lot of those archives albums we did.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like my playing or timing or anything. It was just, had to make her happy. So I played with them 3 months, 3.5 months or something. Anyways, that whole time, we drank and we did the other things, but nothing like
right
the night of. And then we got with his last band, they were all straight.
Yeah.
One's diabetic and the other one was into. So I tried to get him on this ginseng trip, and he did pretty well, and then he had his off nights, and then he did pretty well, and then, you know, his manager was driving him nuts.
Jeez.
You know. I won't get into that story, but he's another person I could, you know, put where he ended up.
Yeah.
Not that way, but
yeah.
In a way, I don't really know what happened, but I don't know, it just, that was just all sad, and it's, I mean, you know, I thought about it for a long time, it just got to him.
Yeah, it's a tough business, man. It really is.
And, you know, he plays performance with Beck, and
yeah,
like when I talked to Jeff, he said he played great, man. He said,
yeah.
You know, I love your brother's playing. I mean, I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I wish he could hear you saying that right now, Jeff. And he goes, yeah, he can.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's true. The,
Yeah, I mean, it is considered all of us have drug problems.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And when I say all of us, I don't mean it that way.
Right.
And alcohol, too, and then whatever else goes on with it.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of bands partied hard. I mean, Skinner was crazy. I talked to Ed Smith, who just passed away.
Yeah.
Ed King, I'm sorry. Ed King.
Ed King.
Yeah, good guy, you know. And they really partied hard. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Almost they all did.
Yeah.
I mean, they really did.
Yeah. But,
I've been with Black Oak, you know, we're a party band.
Yeah.
But I was kind of going overboard without really realizing it, too, about 10 years ago when I had congestive heart failure.
Yeah. That's a wake-up call.
Then came the AFib, and,
yeah,
you know.
That's a wake-up call.
So I quit drinking, I quit everything.
Yeah. Good,
you know,
for you, man. Good for you.
Well, you pretty much have to. You know, if you don't, you know, I don't think it gives you too many chances.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to listen to your body.
Know.
Yeah. That's true.
I don't know how you live through that one. It's like, I don't either.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know how you live through that one. It's like, I don't, you know, it's not going to keep doing it. That's just realization.
I'm like you. I hung around a lot of guys. You know, I was, you know, high school, I had real long hair and didn't want to go to school and, you know, played guitar and, you know, same kind of group, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I'm glad I slowed things down, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we all kind of have, regardless of our reasoning, because we're
right.
Getting older.
Exactly.
It's hard to really, you know, keep up with it. You know, and who knows really what they do anymore anyway. I don't, you know, the opiates and...
Oh, it's crazy,
yeah,
today.
Like that.
Everyone's on heroin today.
Yeah, so I mean...
You know? There are more overdoses than ever. You know that? With
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So who's to say, and believe me, I know they have, because I went to Mayo Clinic for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So there's places that are still out there, but you know, you gotta... Want to go.
You got to want to go. Exactly.
And they're kind of expensive unless you get, you know, into your 30 days and the whole, or your 30 days.
Yep.
Now, that doesn't, I mean, that's what I did, but I knew the results, and then, you know, people say, well, you got to follow up, and I did what I could there, and I just said, you know, I can do this on my own because I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do drugs. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But in Brazil, it's like, there it was.
What's the marijuana laws in Iowa like?
Well, you know, it's still not legal. But,
right.
You know, it's like the same. They're okay with it. You know, they're not, you know. But, you know, there's people that still think it's so, you know, they can just go to Colorado and get a bunch and bring it back here. And they can't do that, you know, in the car anymore because they pull you over anything.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's cut back quite a bit, but
yeah.
I think someday, might be a while yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other states around us may do it before us, but.
Yeah, Florida's still tough,
you know,
too.
She's a tri-state, so we're on a South Dakota and Nebraska's border.
Right.
So
tell me about your 1958 Thunderbird, and do you still have some old cars, or what?
Oh, my 58 Thunderbird. Well, that was in 72, you gotta realize that, so it wasn't that old, but it was a classic. I mean, it, you know, even back then, it was pretty good shape, but I got a 95 Mustang, a convertible GT.
Uh-huh.
Really nice.
I like Thunderbirds.
And then I got like this Tommy Bull and Suburban, where I started out just having like one, these really professional looking decals. You know, they do cars. They,
right.
Like Domino Pizza, but I didn't have that done. I had decals, different ones made. But I just had like teaser in one door, and then private eyes on the other door. You know, and I thought, you know, they're really cheap there. I had to do my own, I'll send you a picture, Ray. I had to do my own Suburban.
Right.
I mean, my mine and Tommy's history.
Uh-huh.
it's like a driving photo album. I get the weirdest looks, and now everybody knows. And people, you shouldn't leave your keys in your car, you know. Who's going to take it? First of all, it's 1999. It's in good shape, though, and, you know. But, you know, they called me and probably asked me, what's it look like?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Tommy Bones, you know, Suburban that drives all over town. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we know that one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to even ask my name.
Well, you must be well known in that area, huh?
Yeah, everybody pretty much knows.
Everybody knows you. Yeah, that's cool.
The street I live on. Let's say I'm the mayor of Court Street.
You should run for mayor.
Well, you know who did that? Fred Grandy, what's his name?
Oh, that's right. Gopher from Love Boat.
Yeah, he's from here.
Yeah, that's right.
I think he won.
Oh, did he win in Iowa? Did he run in Iowa?
Yeah, he's from Sioux City.
Oh, but did he run in politics in Iowa?
I think he did. He started out here.
Okay. Huh.
And then he went on to bigger and better things, which I don't know what ever happened to him. But yeah, his family lived here, and mm-hmm. does live here still.
You know, I just saw him. He was, they were advertising the big anniversary, 40 years or something of Love Boat, because they're all connected.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole cast was there.
Did they ask him what he does, or?
No, I didn't hear that. He was just, you know, just talking about the Love Boat.
I probably did.
Yeah. He might be connected with Princess also, you know, with the Princess cruise ships.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because I know.
I'm like a celebrity guy that's on it?
I think so.
Yeah, I kind of walked through. And,
right, right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But he looked pretty good. He still looks good.
We've done a couple of those where, you know, they do the autograph sessions.
Yeah.
I got to meet, you know.
Yep.
Jerry Lewis and Chuck Negron and.
Yep.
Floyd Sneed and. And John Lennon's girlfriend, the one that Mei Ling or something.
Exactly.
But you can't go up and talk to him because they'll say it's all in my book. Why would I want to talk to you when you buy my book? Like, well, it's not that so much. I don't have a lot to.
Yeah.
Send a couple questions for you. Don't get mad at me.
Well, I had Chuck on twice. Chuck Negron.
Did you?
Yeah, he's a good guy, you know, and he went through hell, man, with drugs.
Yeah, I know he did.
Yeah, he really went through hell.
That was it, went down.
Yep. I mean, he was on the streets begging for money, and he was homeless, and oh, my man, it was, that was a bad scene.
But he straightened up, that's for sure.
He did, but you know what he told me? He went to a lot of clinics, and they treated him like a, you know, like a celebrity. And finally, he went to a clinic that treated him like crap, and that's how he got straight. Yeah. But he went to a lot of different different clinics that did not help.
Well, what's cool about my deal, cool only in the sense that, you know, that Hazelton, I mean, like, you know how clinics are. I mean, there's not a whole lot of them, and they're, you know, they got to be reputable, you know.
Yeah.
So I was going to go to Hazelton, and that's where Steve and Tyler went, and couple other guys went there. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, you know, that's in Minnesota. It's not that far. But I was sick. You know, I just got out of the hospital, so they sent me the mail because it's built into the hospital. So after 15 days in there, I had a bout. I had vertigo. I collapsed. So it's a good thing that, you know, because at Hazelton, they had to call an ambulance and come and get me and take me to the hospital, and
right.
I wouldn't have made it.
Mm.
So it's a good thing I went to Mayo.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where that place was known.
Oh, yeah, they're huge. Great reputation. Johnny, take care of yourself, man. Don't, you know what I mean? We need you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We need you, man.
I'm going to work.
We need you, you know?
I'll let you know. I don't mean to be the first one I tell, but I'll definitely let you know.
You know, rock, the rockers are slowly diminishing. They're almost kind of gone.
Yeah.
We need you, man.
Well, you know, I'm with Jim Dandy. He's like...
That's right.
Now, you interviewed him, didn't you?
Twice, yeah. He's a great interviewer.
Well, he's easy because all I have to do is ask him one question. And he keeps on the phone for an hour. And then he goes, and you say, okay, Jim, thanks a lot. And then he'll still try to talk. That's what he just called me about half hour ago. I'm going, oh, no.
He's a good guy. I like him. I like him a lot.
That's the absolute truth, as you know.
Yeah. Boy, he's a great conversationalist.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah, but I mean, just take one question and turn it into give you like 100 different answers.
Well, that's a great interview.
And then you forget about what you're going to ask him next because he either answered it or you did forget.
Yeah. But you know what's so cool is back in the day, say when Black Oak, Arkansas was in the early 70s or mid 70s, you know, back in their heyday, you couldn't get a lot of answers from them back then. I mean, today you can't, you know?
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's true. No, it's interesting that somebody's still around and they're, you know, the people you interview, I'm sure you're a little bit select in whatever way that you're select with, you know?
Right.
You know, you just don't get, you know, like the whatever, I won't even say no names, but I mean, they're not really known and people don't really know a history for them. It's like, nothing against that, but they don't, you know, you don't really hear what they're like now and what they were about then.
And exactly. And not only that.
You've interviewed.
Yeah.
You've told me about it. And variants, I would love to hear some of those.
You gotta get my book, man. It's called The Rockstar Chronicles. It's available on Amazon. It's got over close to 50 interviews, and 11 of the guys have passed on, like Jack Bruce and, you know, Ronnie Montrose.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good because it's, you know, they're just spilling their guts and you know, it's very interesting. It really
Rock
is.
Rock and Roll Chronicles?
The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. I'm going to do 4 series. I'm going to have you in one of the series, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll get you in there. We'll talk all about. I'll do a special section for Tommy, and we'll get all the guys. We'll get Dick. We'll get them all in there. So
all in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Starting with Tommy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good idea.
We'll do a tribute. So,
did you ever read Touch by Magic?
I did not, but I was going to mention that. Is that a good book?
Well, yeah. He interviews. I don't know. It takes you through the era.
Right.
Interviews the same people. He got quite a few people, but not all that many.
Right.
Talk about Tommy. But yeah, it's great stories.
Okay, good.
Really good stories.
I'll mention that. I'll put a link to that site also.
Yeah. Greg Fredo.
Okay, yep. I got that written down here.
Okay.
I just had a couple more questions. One, you know, there's always conspiracy theories. You know, I asked Dionne Warwick about Whitney, and she said it was just her time. There's nothing happened there. And I asked, you know, do you think there was anything handled wrong? You know, just like they said something, you know, things might have been handled wrong with Jimi Hendrix, you know, and he choked on his vomit and all this stuff. Do you think anything was done wrong at the hotel?
I think the thing is there, not being naive, like with every person that, like a Kennedy or
right.
Ellis Marilyn that was involved with Kennedy, you know,
yeah.
Marilyn, she knew too much about Kennedy's.
Right.
Well, there's a correlation between the two, but we don't know if that's really, they haven't figured out by now, but, you know, they have DNA back. They didn't have all that stuff like they do now.
Right.
I just know, read that book and you'll be able to, I get nothing from it.
Okay.
But you get a pretty idea of, you know, he interviews Barry Fay.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, one of the lines in there was, you know, anyone can hear this or read it. You know, because my mom and dad, I remember being on the phone with them. I'm going, now what do we do, Barry? I mean, you know, Tommy made money, made a lot of records, and you know, my mom and dad are getting an attorney from Sioux City, Iowa. I mean, and it's like, well, I'll help you guys out, you know. I'll put you right where you're supposed to be with Tommy's, where else he's all this stuff, so. Never really heard much back from him again. But in that book, it says when they interviewed him, he you know, just got to watch what he says, but then sometimes he doesn't even care. It says that he had $40,000 that came in one time, and he goes, he's saying all this whole time that how much money Tommy owed him. I mean, he's Tommy's manager. But he wasn't managing very long.
Right.
You know, it makes it sound like millions and millions of dollars that Tommy owed him. If you already have a record deal, what are you investing in? The record company. I know about touring and I know stuff, you know. You owe the record company. You don't owe your manager for
right.
what
exactly.
he does.
Exactly.
But not for recording the session, every you know.
Yep.
But he was tour support, he had like paid for all that. Anyway, you know, he says, get the 40 grand, but he didn't know if he should send it to us or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we appreciate it, or he didn't use the word appreciate. It sounds stupid. It was, he said something like, I didn't know if they wanted it or not. That's kind of what he said. Be it my parents, I mean. So, what does that say? I mean, and Tommy knew all this and where his money was going, and you know, last gig, actually saying the last gig was here in Sioux City, and I was down at the Hilton with him, and we just went out to the airport to get picked up,
mm-hmm.
you know, by the news crew was out there, and interviewed him out there, and cameras, and he's on the news, you know, homeboy turns it. They come back to town kind of deal.
Right.
And that meant a lot to Tommy when you come back to your hometown and say,
yep.
You know, eat your heart out for kicking me out of school, do this and that.
Yeah.
We got to the Hilton and he goes, Tommy Bowen, and they go, what, you know, what can I help you, sir? And he's like, well, we have rooms here. And they go, no, you don't. No, you don't. There's a room here for Tommy Bowen, I'm sorry. And, you know, Barry did stuff like that purposely to Tommy.
Right.
So he was going in the direction like he didn't really want him around anymore.
Huh.
He's getting so pissed off to him and Barry and his love life that either he's going to kill himself or somebody was.
Right.
You know. So I'm not going to, I'll leave it at that, but I mean, I'm just saying.
Yep.
So the band had to come up to my mom and dad's house and wait to get money. They couldn't even get in the room.
Hmm.
Now, that's got to be embarrassing. I mean, beyond. So I was in the kitchen. We call up Barry, and he just say, I hate you, MF, and this and that. And can't wait to get away from you. And
yeah.
And then, the story didn't make a whole lot of sense either. And like I said, once you read that book, they interview all the
roadies,
and then they, and what one did, what they should have done, what they could have done, what, why they didn't do it, and he called Barry a few times, and Barry got him even more pissed off.
And then
they splurged that night, everything was right there. She was pain. And when you start not going, oh, I'll just have a drink, and then you hit a couple Quaaludes, and you go, well, I'll just do some blow, and then goes from that to the other, and then to the other, and that's makes it look like committing suicide. That's not what he's doing at all.
Right.
So that's where I said, you could put that puzzle together. Yeah, that you understand where we're coming from. His management, in some way killed him.
Yeah, I know.
Whether it's his music profession.
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to save the guy's career. Don't think by keeping him out of the hospital when he's overdosing, you're going to help it. If he would have came out of it, he would have been messed. So, and this is got, he has a bodyguard there. What did that guy do?
Was he in the room?
Well, he's got to check on him.
Yeah.
They were, I know what bodyguards do. I mean, that time when Molly Crew had, Miss Neal. They got in that car accident and killed that guy from Panora Rocks.
Right.
I mean, he couldn't even get on that floor.
Yeah.
Go to his room. I mean,
exactly.
And Tommy didn't do nothing to anybody, but what's a bodyguard supposed to be supposed to? Not necessarily babysit you, but yeah, check on you.
Sure.
And make sure everybody, and you die in Miami.
Yeah.
And then it's really weird. I think I told you, because next year I moved down there. It's like, wow. I don't think I needed to come down here, but.
Right. Well, I told you before, I know the hotel. I mean, me and my family used to stay there every year at the Newport. I mean, I knew that place like the back of my hand. It's a beautiful hotel, you know?
Yeah, I told you I went up there and saw Junior Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I had to go there. But, so I don't know if I gave you a very good answer, but yeah, there's definitely some chaos going on.
Well, it's the same thing with Chris Cornell. I mean, he was left alone. There's no bodyguard. Same thing happened. I mean, but he committed suicide. But there's nobody there.
It makes me mad about the when you hire a bodyguard,
right?
That Barry made it. Barry hired this guy, and he said next. Well, I think it was a Florida. I don't want to talk too bad about it.
It's all right.
Anyway, I think he did some time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I don't get it. Whoever the guy was, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
I don't.
Doesn't.
What the guy was he supposed to? What was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
And everybody in that room said they never saw him.
No, doesn't make sense at all. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Was he? Did he party with Jeff Beck at all, or was he on his own there?
No. They went to, they planned on being together the next 3 weeks, next month.
Right.
All sorts of shows.
Yeah, that did make sense, because he was, music-wise, I thought he was doing great.
Yeah, Al Murray is in the band then,
Yeah. And then Barry Fay commits suicide, right, back in 2013.
Who did?
With Barry Fay, right?
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of weird. Huh.
Well, yeah. Moving right along on that one.
Yeah.
I wish I had actual facts.
I know.
Since I don't.
I know.
It's just, you know, you make, what his girlfriend says, you make your own decision.
Yeah.
You hear what's actual facts.
Yeah.
That actual, and then you draw your own conclusion.
You know, this, the same thing happened to my cousin. His girlfriend, living girlfriend, died the day before he did. And then he dies. My cousins, you know, wanted to open up an investigation. The police wouldn't let them. They just wrote it off as a drug overdose. And still to this day, we really don't know exactly the facts. To the,
yeah.
You know?
So, and we should.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
It is modern technology.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny, here's your final question, man. I ask this question to everybody, and I get some interesting answers, okay? If you had a Field of Dreams wish like the movie to perform with or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? Now, I'm thinking it's probably Tommy, but...
Yeah.
Tommy...
Well, you know what? There's different kind of ways in his heart and soul and everything. I know him pretty, you know, I know him pretty well, you know, whatever. But the, Michael Walden. From,
okay.
His band.
Yep.
His first band from Mavis, you know, and from,
Sure.
I mean, he's a producer, you know, because, you know, Whitney and all that stuff, and he's done all that stuff. And he's just a character, and he's interesting, and he's loving, and we've talked, and I've seen him several times, and I sent him a Tommy Bowen calendar, which I'll send you one and put your birthday in there if you want it.
Okay.
Take it every year.
Right.
But, and every year he sends me a Christmas card.
Uh-huh.
Now for the last 10 years. So, I mean, and I've heard things he said, and I've called him a few times to talk to him, and I love his strumming. I mean, I just, you know. So I guess it would have to be him, and I think he's real knowledgeable and I'm not really into that Spice Kidmore and all that stuff, but all those guys got something out of being with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as his disciples or whatever they were.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I'll be that, but I'm an apostle.
Yeah.
Not a disciple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Michael Walden.
Okay. And Tommy.
And Tommy.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Tommy.
And Tommy. Yeah, you know, I asked Julian Lennon, he did say John. He wanted to play with his dad, you know. He wasn't exactly...
Well, you know, it's crazy because, I mean, when Tommy got a hold of me,
uh-huh.
I played with him at different times. And,
right.
You know, when I was, like, turned 18, and I did a Zephyr reunion.
Right.
And I said, where's Bobby? And Bobby was somewhere. And you could ask him. I never got an answer. I said, well, where's Barbara Chamberlain? He goes, I don't like him, but, you know, whatever. I said, okay. And we had just done I went with him and Stanley. We did a week gig up in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
With Sherry Kane Harris, this violin player.
Right.
Down at Dewey Show, but it wasn't Dewey, though. Just Sherry Kane. So we got back, and then he says, we're going to do a night at Ebbets. You play drums. I go, well, I don't know about I know the song. I listened to them all, but, you know, the albums came out, but I don't know how well I know them. He said, no, you'll do fine. So I go down there, and the Robert Chamberlain's there, the original drummer. And he just said, we walk in, he's already in there. It's at Evans Field, you know, it's a small place.
Yeah.
He goes, what's going on here? You don't want me to play drums tonight? He goes, why do you want to play drums tonight? He goes, well, yeah, I'm in the band. And Tommy goes, well, you were in the band. And no, I don't want you to play drums, but if you want to set up and my brother play next, he's here to play too.
Uh-huh.
And he just said, like, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
So what we're getting out there is, I think he really wanted me to play with him. Paul Sochi's got some great, you know, it says a lot in that song. It doesn't say much as far as the amount of words,
mm-hmm.
but it's only two verses, but, you know, it tells a story.
Right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And we could charge a cover charge and they actually pay it.
Well, Johnny, I'm glad you're back with Black Oak, you know, and
Yeah. And great talking to you, Ray, and everybody
talking to you too, man.
In Florida and all over the world.
Yeah. Well, what's your can you give out your email address or is that private?
No, it's not. It's johnnyboland@hotmail.com.
Oh, that's easy. All right, let me send you some links to the interview and anything else I might have. I mean, I can send you the ebook format for the book, but it's very impressive if you get the hardcover.
Oh, I'm going to get it.
Okay, but if you like, I can send you the ebook format as well.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm at that advance. I'll get it.
You'll love it, man.
I just didn't have it that way anyway. I know a girlfriend of mine got Glenn's book that way, and I'm not really a phone guy. They never really went well with me.
Did you get Vitale's book?
I got rid of my BlackBerry about 2 months ago.
Really? I had a flip phone for a long time, too.
Yeah. Wow. So,
Johnny, did we cover everything today? Is there anything else?
I think so, Ray.
Okay.
If there's anything you missed, anything else you want for me, get hold of me and I'll stay in touch. And I got your number now.
Stay in touch, man. I really appreciate it.
I sure will. I appreciate you getting a hold of me and doing this.
My best to you. Good luck on the tour.
Jimmy said hello.
Okay, great. Tell him
hi. Okay.
All right, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Johnny. Take care.
Bye.
All right, bye. For more information about Johnny Boland, visit www.facebook.com/Johnny-Boland, www.TommyBoland.com, BlackOakArkansas.net, www.Facebook.com/OfficialBlackOakArkansas, Black Oak Arkansas on Facebook. You can find out about Black Oak Arkansas tour dates at Black Oak Arkansas. BlackOakArkansas.net. Very special thanks to the great Trace Keane for arranging this interview with Johnny Boland, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, and my book is out, The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. It chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet, and I'd like to read to you now, everybody that's featured in the book that I personally interviewed. Chris Squire from Yes, Dr. John, Greg Lake, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Henry McCullough, who played with Joe Cocker for many years, Jack Bruce, of course, the great bass player and songwriter from Cream, Joe Lala, Blues Image, played with many bands, including Stephen Stills and Manassas, the Bee Gees, the list goes on, great session player. Johnny Winter, Keith Emerson, of course, from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. Paul Kattner from Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship. Ray Thomas from the Moody Blues. Ronnie Montrose from Montrose. Also played with Edgar Winter Band, Tony Joe White. David Clayton Thomas from Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Mike Love from the Beach Boys. Tommy Rowe. Barry Hay from Golden Earring. Chris Thompson from Manfred Mann. Jesse Colin Young, Youngbloods, John Kay from Steppenwolf, Julian Lennon, Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders, Ricky Dolenz from The Monkees, Peter Rivera, the great lead singer and drummer from Rare Earth, Tommy James from the Shondells, Todd Rundgren from Utopia, Dave Mason, used to play with Traffic, Edgar Winter, Frank Marino from Mahogany Rush, Greg Rowley from Santana, Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull, Jim Dandy Mangrum, lead singer from Black Oak, Arkansas, John Anderson, the great lead singer from Yes, Lou Graham from Foreigner, Mick Box from Uriah Heep, Randy Bachman used to play with the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive, Robin Trower. Roger Fisher used to be the lead guitar player from Heart. Steve Hackett from Genesis. Annie Haslam from Renaissance. Melanie Safka, Petulia Clark, Susie Quattro, Colin Blundstone from The Zombies, Dave Davies from The Kinks, Jim McCarty from The Yardbirds, and of course Pete Best, the original drummer from The Beatles. Have a great week, everybody!
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.